Hi, I'm Jeff Johnston, host of the Living Undeterred podcast, powered by Brighton. Honored today to have a friend of mine on the show. I've been really intentional in rebranding this podcast to bring in a wide range, a spectrum of different types of people. So had the neuroscientist on, had the athletic coach, had the Gen Zer on, had my story, a few solo podcasts, but today I'm bringing on one of the early advocates I met in this space, the mental wellness space. A friend of mine, Mike Farr, lives in Cedar Rapids, or right inside Cedar Rapids?
North Liberty.
North Liberty, suburb of Cedar Rapids. And Mike, you know, like me and a lot of other people, have lost a loved one to we call the deaths of despair. So the three deaths of despair: overdose, alcohol, suicide. And there's 909 good people, like our family members we're going to talk about today, that lost their lives to these issues. It seemed to, maybe on the surface and some statistics, looks like they're improving, but the majority of the statistics aren't validating that things are actually slowly progressing worse. But Mike and I are eternal optimists, even though we probably get into the trenches a little bit today, or into the weeds. So Mike, thanks for being on the show. You and I've talked a million times.
Yes.
I didn't want to come into this very rehearsed or scripted, because I think it's important that we're authentic and genuine and vulnerable on these topics. So before we go any further, why don't you tell us a little bit about you and about why our paths crossed?
Sure. September 22nd, 2017, I lost my middle child to suicide, Garrett Rondell Farr. Garrett had been depressed before and had been diagnosed with depression since age 6.
Mm.
And a month prior to him dying, he was in the rehab center at the University of Iowa for wanting to and thinking about attempting suicide. We got basically 4 weeks later and he was gone. So 5 weeks after he passed, I started my foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And at his visitation, his best friend came to me after 700 people passed me. And I'm trying to hold together as best as I can at the event. After seeing 700 people, and he pulled me aside at the very end and said, "Mike, can I talk to you?" I said, "Sure." He pulled me aside. He says, "Mike, I don't think I want to live anymore. I think I want to go like Garrett."
He said this at the visitation.
At the visitation. Wow. And I said, can I bring your parents over here and bring them in on the conversation? He said, "Sure." So I brought them over and we had a talk with them, and they got him the help he needed. And he he's a teacher now, has his master's degree, teaches here in Cedar Rapids, graduated from Coe College. But I knew at that point,
that's amazing,
I needed to do what I could to help people his age and all people that are suffering from depression. Because as we know, depression is a disease, no different than cancer, alcoholism, drugs, any of that stuff. And in suicide, most people that are suicidal or that do die by suicide or attempt suicide usually have some type of drug habit and some type of alcohol abuse going on to basically soothe their mind, to try to get the demons out of their head
to numb them.
Yeah. Yes. So 5 weeks after my son died, I had this foundation set up, Project Safe, the Cedar River Corridor area. We're a 501(c). We're a nonprofit, and we've been, you know, as I said to all my friends when I got my 501(c), I said, "Now all the easy work begins. The easy work part is I need your money."
Yeah.
So I can talk to people and reach people and we can do the things we need to do. On April 23rd, we had our first community conversation. And that we also launched our first website at that point. At that community conversation, there's about 186 people at Prairie. And my old son, Brandon, he suffered from depression also, and at age 8, he talked about and wanted to end his life at age 8.
Mm.
And he was in college as a freshman in college after high school at the University of Iowa. And he got to partying too much. He wanted to be a doctor. Mm-hmm. Well, that became something that was not going to happen because of his grades.
Yeah, yeah.
He partied too much, grade too low, and decided to straighten out second semester. Things started seeing spiraling again, and we pulled him out of college at that point there. Mom and I did. And at this event we held, he was one of the speakers there of the panel. And he said in front of his mother, in front of myself as MC, that if his mom and I wouldn't have pulled him out of college when we did, he had been in the ground before his brother. So we didn't know he was suicidal. We knew he was depressed,
mm-hmm.
but he was suicidal. So what I try to do with Project Safe is help people learn in the signs of suicide. To make sure people are aware of those signs. So many people have their head in the sand. It's not going to happen to me, not going to mm-hmm. happen to my family. I'm here to say, yes, it is. Yes, it can. You know, all it takes is one disaster to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And the results of that disaster could be a suicide, drug overdose, alcoholism,
right.
wreck, whatever. And it's how we get trained for those events. We'll determine whether we save that life or we lose our friend, family member out there. So I think it's important to learn the signs. Garrett's sign was the hardest one to find, and it's the last sign. His last sign was just happy and go lucky.
Mm.
And the happy go lucky, you know, we've seen 100 times when he has his meds finally took kicked off right, and they are heading the right direction. He'd get in a better space and things went well and he'd laugh again and whatever. Well, this time that happened, we figured the meds were kicking in.
Mm-hmm.
No, he made a decision when, where, and how.
Mm.
And that was going to happen on Friday night, and at his disclosed location. So
that's so there was preparation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously anybody watching this right now is, you know, their hearts go out to you and your family, but you know, what you've done despite or in the face of has just shown your character. And I think that's probably for anybody watching this, the things that I first see is 6 and 8. It's like, wow, you hear that and you're like, I have an 8-year-old granddaughter, obviously, Brighton. It's like, how do those thoughts of taking your life even come into the head of a 6-year-old? I mean, when I was 6, growing up in the 70s, early 80s, that wasn't even, I don't know if I even knew what that was, what suicide was. I mean, and then even through high school, we never really had any conversations about it. We didn't have speakers coming in, and I can remember it was always the drunk driving people, you know, the alcohol and drugs. There was never discussions about that. So do you see a shift in society where we're having this conversation specifically with suicide at younger ages, or maybe we should do a better job at it? Or how do you even have a conversation with an 8-year-old about this?
I don't know if you task it underneath you, but the name suicide. I don't think 6 and 8-year-olds understand suicide.
Right.
What they understand is that everyone would be better off if I wasn't around.
Yeah, that's good.
That's the major question they ask.
Right.
And that's with anyone with depression, that's what they ask themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'd be better off without me. Mm-hmm. You're always yelling at me. You're always upset with me. You always seem disappointed at me. You know, and you're just trying to be a parent. You're trying to guide your child around the right way and trying to teach them the right values and everything else. But sometimes that seems as overwhelming for them, especially someone suffering from depression.
So when a child threatens to do something, self-harm, maybe it's not suicide, but it's just harming themselves. How much of that is just a cry for help? How much of it's legitimate?
So I was asked at our first panel thing, and you know, you have to take each time as a possible, yes, they're going to do it.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, and they do in their life, you're going to say, what if I could have, or what if I would have? And so you spend an extra hour, extra 5 hours out of your day, extra 24 hours, whatever it is, you take whatever you need.
Mm-hmm.
The big thing is learning the signs, but also learning the proper questions. The proper question isn't, are you planning to harm yourself? The proper question, which is hard for a lot of people to ask, are you planning to end your life? Are you planning to kill yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Are you looking to die by suicide? That's a tough question for a lot of people to ask.
Yeah, it is.
If the question, the answer is yes, Do you have a plan?
How many are you going to answer yes? There really are.
Several.
Okay.
Surprisingly.
Yeah.
Do you have a plan? If they say, well, not really. They need to be watched. You need to make sure you get some more help and all that. But people that are suicidal, they may say, yes, I do have a plan.
Hmm.
What is your plan? And they will tell you their plan. Hmm. Garrett told me his plan four weeks before he died. Told me what it was. And I told him, please don't do that.
Wow.
So, but it's learning that, you know, that there's a plan and then getting the help they need, finding the proper resources that are around within this community. This community has a huge amount of resources.
I know it does.
But So many people are not aware of the amount of resources or who they are. Most people look for resources once the devastating event has happened, whether an attempt or an ending of life.
Mm-hmm.
And then the families are left. So we work trying to help families also, if they happen to have a loss or have an attempt, try to help them to A, not have another attempt, B, they have a loss, how to get to the next day, next week, next month. And I would say this to anyone out there, and it isn't just suicide or alcohol or drugs deaths, it's any death. Everyone says to you, hey, if you need anything, let me know.
Right.
Everyone says that to you, even grandpa dies. Well, they're around for 3 months. They bring her some food, they do this, that, whatever. But 3 months, they're gone.
Yeah.
It's like the Eagles song, New Kid in Town.
Yeah.
There's another new thing in town. Yeah. So what I would tell everyone, if you have a friend that had a loss, check with them in 6 months. Check with them in 9 months.
Right.
Check with them in a year.
Yep.
Because that's when they really need your help. Because they're struggling. Because they're by themselves.
Right.
No one else is reaching out. No one's out there to help them.
And COVID.
And coping just and all that. And that's...
Yeah.
It's a way to prevent another future death in the family because of that loss. Because a lot of times in suicide losses and other losses like that, there's multiple deaths because the coping didn't happen. And it was unable to happen because no one is there for them.
Yeah, I think suicide is such a tough one. They're all tough, but like, you know, drug overdoses, you know, just don't do drugs that you can overdose on, right? And you probably aren't going to overdose. It's like alcoholism, just, you know, stop drinking. Well, suicide isn't linear. It goes like this. Like I'm assuming people have these thoughts and then they have really good days and then the thoughts drop and then something happens that triggers them and now they're back. And so I think there's got to be a mindset shift in society where we look at normalizing the narrative that people tell themselves, the stories that we tell ourselves all day long. And try to stay away from pathologizing everything. Cause I think that's where the feel good is. Like we have to name it, the tame it type thing. I think if young adults, and specifically talking about young adults, just knew that probably everybody in their whole school at one time or another has wanted to quit or give up. And maybe giving up is taking their life. Maybe it's just dropping off the football team or transferring a different school or whatever. So they're not alone. I think that's the first thing that you learn in this space is that nobody's alone. And that also, and I talk about Seth and Prudence a lot, Mike, because it's easy for people to kind of get hung up on the death part of Seth and Prudence, but there were problems in the collateral damage in a family when there's not death. There's all the problems. And so even before Seth died, there was systemic problems in our family foundation that obviously the death changed everything, but there's more families out there that don't have what you and I went through. There's more families that don't have that death, which I don't ever want anyone to get those calls we got. So I guess going to those parents that fear that that could be the outcome, like they worry about Seth, like what happened to me and you, my heart goes out to him because you don't have to have someone die to have challenges in a family, you know?
I think every family should have good, open, communications.
Right. That's right. Probably, I think that's where I was heading. With their children and what's next.
Ask them where they're at, how they're feeling, what's going on. I think social media should be monitored a bit.
I want to talk about that.
And yeah. I think that, it doesn't have to have, they don't have to have the same outcome that we did. But, suicide is one of the most preventable deaths out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's preventable from the aspect if people learn the signs, if people learn all this information, they can save more lives out there. And that's there's a class called QPR, question, persuade, refer. Yep. The 2-hour class. If people would take this class, I think that the more eyes out there would help us save more lives. Our foundation will pay for groups to host, put on an event of QPR.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot do more than 100 at a time.
That's a big group.
But we can do probably as little as 20 or smaller than if need be. But it's just, it's only costs us $3 for the paperwork and then whatever for the person doing the training out there. But it's a low cost avenue. And the more people can get trained in question, persuade, and refer, I think truly believe that the more lives we're going to save. And our focus is within our county, Linn County, Johnson County, Jones County, in the area that we serve. But we're willing to go beyond that also. We stay in the corridor area, but we've gone out beyond that. We've been all the way down to Fairfield, Keosauqua area, been to Washington, been out to Monticello and Anamosa and Dyersville. We've been a lot of different areas. It isn't that we won't. It's just we need people to come forward. Reach out to my number is 319-721-9812. Call me up, leave a message, send me a text that you'd like to talk about something on that end, and let's try to organize something that way, because we can save lives.
Two questions here. One is on the use of technology today as a bridge to getting help, because I know like right now, if you want to go see a therapist, it's 2 to 4 weeks maybe to get in there. And as you know, suicide can happen in just that quick. So not that you can have a therapist with you 24/7, but you could have a resource with you 24/7 that you could get some benefit from. It's not replacing a therapist. So with technology, that was one of my questions, is where do you see, maybe that's not a fair question to you because I don't know how much you follow all the tech that's coming. That's pretty exciting. But the second question is like peer support, like where is community? Where is, and I think that's where the merging, where technology and human connection can actually be together. It's not like technology is replacing humans. Technology can get you in front of humans quicker. So like if you want to go see a therapist and you get a referral and you're online and you're setting the appointment and they say September 7th, you're like, that's a month out roughly. I don't know if I can wait that long. But if you could have the ability to do something on your phone or a phone call like 988 or something, or just something where you can get to tomorrow, because with a lot of, especially in the drug addiction, substance abuse world, a lot of deaths, had that person just lived to tomorrow, maybe that was their sober day. Maybe my day I quit drinking was December 24th of 17. And imagine if I would have died the day before, I never would have made it to my sober day. So I think we owe people that opportunity to get them to that next day. So back to my question, technology, where do you see that? And then what's the value of, peer to peer and
sure. There's a lot more telehealth that happens because of COVID.
Yeah.
So there's opportunities to maybe see someone sooner through a telehealth appointment, telehealth, but that's one way. Number two, I think the green bandana, peer groups like that within the school systems. Linn-Mar has their own program out there also. Mm-hmm. But I think those type programs where peers have been trained and have a counselor that is out there and that can help them find the resources they need to get the help they need. But having a peer at school that has a green bandana on the backpack, knowing that this is a safe haven, a safe place to go. Remember when we grew up, there was a little sign on windows and houses that told you if you got lost, you could stop into this house here.
Oh, okay.
And there's a person there, you could stop at that house if you got lost as a little kid.
Yeah.
This is a safe house to stop at.
Interesting. Yeah.
So I remember that growing up as a young kid.
Yeah.
I would think you might, but maybe not.
I don't remember that, but I'm thinking now you wouldn't have that because everyone's paranoid. Everyone's going to abduct your kid. They would recommend you don't go in someone's house.
Right.
Yeah. It's weird how times have changed.
It's amazing. But I think that the peer groups out there, there's good peer groups out there.
Yeah.
And they're doing a lot of great work overall. And their attendance as far as kids joining
for
the participation rate is going up. Because I think the kids themselves want to help their peers.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to have to deal with another loss out there within their own school system.
So why are kids struggling so much today more than other generations when in reality they have more than any generation has ever had? If that's not the...
You answered that one.
I know.
Because they have more.
Yeah. I mean, that's the dichotomy is that as adults and we're making all these amazing things for them and we are just coming up with technology that the velocity of the technology is so fast now that in a year we're going to have things that took us 20 years to do in 1 year. So it's like, where does this start to like level out where we see tech or we see innovation and we see happiness and peace and joy going up. But what we're seeing is this, and we're seeing this. And even before the rise of AI, since Seth and Garrett died, so Seth was in 16, Garrett was the next year. That was before TikTok or close to it. Maybe that was early TikTok. But so back to my question is like, why are kids struggling so much today?
I think because they have more, number one.
They
lost the ability to have an imagination.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You know, when we grew up,
playtime.
Yeah, you know, we had imagination. We didn't have something to keep us entertained.
Yeah,
like we didn't
boredom.
Have something
they can't be bored.
To keep our eyes busy. We didn't have to have stuff right now because it wasn't going to happen right now.
No,
our parents couldn't afford it.
No,
so those things weren't out there. You know, you were able to go out till dark, come home when the streetlights came on. You came home.
Yeah,
those days aren't here because of the people out there. The world's changed, completely changed. You know, people have cell phones in front of their, two-year-old baby, letting them play with the electronic babysitter.
Yeah.
The electronic babysitter is great for mom and dad, so they can get other stuff done, but it's really a terrible resource for the kids themselves.
Yeah.
Technology, they get technically proficient at an earlier age than we ever did because it wasn't available, but is it really the best way? Spending time with family, spending time having dinner together. You know, we had baseball, but it was little league. We didn't all have all these traveling teams, and so in sports, you're gone all the time. You know, baseball is not a 3 month a year type deal; it's a year long deal.
Well, neither was competitive golf for Ian.
Yeah,
who played 24/7.
Yep.
All year long.
Yep. And that's just the way sports are today.
Yep.
And if you want to be any good at it, that's what you have to do.
You have to.
And if you don't, well, you're left behind.
Yeah.
And you're not dropping off team because you're not successful.
And
at
the stress that causes on the parents too. You know, I went through that with Ian, with, you know, him winning tournaments, doing all these things for advocacy because Seth had died when he was a sophomore, the day of districts. And the recruiting was horrendous experience, you know, and just couldn't understand why he wasn't being recruited. So yeah, you're right. That addiction to youth sports created so much stress. And then he had a less enjoyable experience because I was stressed because, you know, we did all this to go to college, right? Well, now in hindsight, no, we didn't. We didn't do all this to go to college. We did this to get him introduced to a sport he can play the rest of his life, you know?
Yeah.
And golf now for him has been a great for his mental health just to go out and play is so. Yeah. I often think about those athletes, especially baseball is a sport where you push and push and push and push. And then after, you know, very small percent of them play college. And if they do, smaller percentage even make it to the bigs. I mean,
yep.
Okay. If your only identity has been baseball your whole life, and now you realize it's not happening, I think that's a whole set of issues for kids that are in heavy in the youth sports. And I don't think parents understand that loop. And I think that's one of the reasons why we're working with the Murray brothers and Kenyon on their facility they're building, the Corda Sports Complex, in that this will be the first like youth sports complex in the country or organization that's really looking at something like Brighton as a value add to the athlete's experience on and off the court. This never would have happened, you know, 10, 15 years ago. If our app would have been around, we'd have got laughed at by athletic teams. Now they're seeing is, you know, we can just keep double downing, trying to get your kid to hit a 100 mile an hour fastball. But that's not going to change a lot of the statistical odds against him about making it in the pros. But what's he going to do if he doesn't make it? Well, parents don't want to have that because their thoughts are my kid is going to make it.
Yeah.
So I think, again, your strike out the stigma event, which I'd like to have you share a little bit about that, how that's become a big event here locally in the Midwest, where you see sports being great for mental health, but I also think it creates a subset of mental health issues as well.
When Garrett died, Prairie, where he went to school at, college
Cedar
community,
Rapids, Prairie, yeah, yep.
College community, they didn't have a licensed mental health counselor.
In 2017.
They had mental health counselors, but they weren't trained in licensed mental health. They were more proxies towards tests, helping kids decide maybe what they're going to do, go to college, not go to college, get a career, you know, all that. And it was after Garrett died and talking with the board there that they decided to put on a licensed mental health counselor for each. Every two schools had one counselor. The problem with it, the high school and the junior high shared one. And they at least need minimum their one of their own each. But let's go a little further than that. If you look at every college team or every pro team, they all have a licensed mental health counselor for their players.
And they do now, yeah.
And schools should be looking at a mental health counselor within the schools themselves for sports, because there's a, you know, a lot of pressures.
I mean, high
as
schools.
A kid, high yeah. school level,
right?
Maybe even to be able to talk to some of the junior high kids.
I agree.
So I mean, it needs to go a step further yet,
yeah,
because it's available out there, and obviously the pros and colleges see a purpose in it and a meaningful purpose on it for their athletes and their own mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the mental health of the adolescents isn't any different than a pro.
No.
And
especially with the prefrontal not being formed by like 27. I mean, a lot of pro at like the Murray brothers are what, 24? I mean, they're think about that. Yep. You know? Yeah, you're right. I think sports can be a huge addition to a young person's life, but if not checked often, you know, through whatever means you can use, it can you can end up being putting out fires the rest of that kid's life.
Sure.
You know, it's not, you're not careful.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about your baseball event. Cause I think that's an amazing, event. How many years you've been doing it, kind of what was the idea behind it? And you've been just so taken in by the community. I don't know how many people you had at your last one, but it was pretty big.
Yeah. Strike Out Stigma. It's a baseball softball event. We usually have 8 or 9 schools involved. And baseball and softball teams. The last couple of years has been out there at Prospect Meadows.
Yeah.
Prior to that is over at Prairie. And we bring on about 35 to 45 different resource groups come out and table to share what products they have within the community.
Mm-hmm.
We also have usually some type of silent auction thing there too. But the main thing is try to get a speaker at the event that can speak to the athletes about mental health at their level and to help them understand why they're important, why they matter, and talk about some of the things they might be currently thinking or wondering about within their own life. So it's a good event for that. It's a good event for the parents to come to because they get to learn a bit too. They get educated at this event. And I think we had 2,000, 2,500 plus people at the event last 2 years each time.
Mm.
So it's been a good event. It's always in May. And it's a deal that it's the preseason game before the actual season starts. That's why these kids can participate in this. It's only a 4-inning deal.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's just a short little scrimmage, per se, for the teams to get together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. So it's been a fun event. Been a very inspirational event and learning event. And,
yeah,
you know, the around the community, you see strikeout stigma shirts. You see people talking about or hearing about it. And it feels good that knowing that maybe the stigma is starting to change a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
That we're making a change or help within the community.
I think it is, because when I've had our booth there for the last few years, conversations I'm having with these kids is just so encouraging, because they're all really excited to talk about this stuff. It's like a new frontier for them, because a lot of them have lost somebody at school. I mean, every school, I have to think, in the probably in the world, but specifically, we'll just stick with the maybe Iowa, let's say. Every single school has been touched by suicide, for sure, whether it's a teacher or a student. And I'd have to say every single school overdose as well at some level. Now with fentanyl being the number one killer, I think, of Americans under 55. I can't remember the statistic anymore. And those numbers have dropped even. So the fentanyl overdose numbers have actually improved a little bit. But one overdose is just like one suicide. It's too many. So I think the more we normalize the conversation, I think the hope is that lower the stigmas, increase, bring attention to, I like to say. I think that the numbers should start getting better. But when you do look at some of the numbers, though, they're not overly encouraging. And that's where I think I struggle as an advocate, is I don't feel like my work's going for nothing. But it's like, man, you think with all this emphasis and all these events and all these apps and all this podcast and all the emphasis put on it, that we start to see some improvement in these numbers. And I'm not trying to be Debbie Downer, but it is frustrating to think that I think more people today are aware of things like 988. They're aware of, you know, even saying commit suicide. People now know that that's not really a thing you should say. Completed or
right,
or unalived is a term used right now a lot. So I think there is a lot of education that normal people have not been touched by suicide, Mike, are starting to appreciate. But I keep going back to the statistics. It's like I keep going back and ask why are we still having at this level, this epidemic that is so systemic in society? Why?
Because people aren't willing to have the conversation, talk about one's mental health helps you and helps other individuals talk about theirs. And I'll just go on to say to you, this is our tagline: together we're saving lives, one life at a time.
Yeah.
And that's what you got to remember.
You have to look
if
at
you can
that.
Save it as one life at a time, one in it's life worth in it. Time are all capitalized.
Yeah.
Because that's all we can do.
And we don't know who that life is.
And we don't know who that is.
Right.
And we can sit there and dwell on, are we being successful? Are we doing enough?
The big numbers.
You never can never do enough.
No, no.
And so we got to look at it positively.
Yeah.
Together.
Yeah.
We're doing this.
Yeah. It's just.
I know.
It's frustrating. I'm positive. Yeah, you and I are positive. We've had this talk many times, but. You know, I just want to wake up one morning, hit the buttons, and see all these numbers going down. And maybe that's just a utopian scenario, because Generation Alpha now coming up behind Gen Z, they've got their own set of challenges that'll be different from what Gen Z had. But obviously, COVID had a really big, you know, I know we're kind of out of COVID, but we're really not. I mean, there's still a lot of people that work from home. And I work from home. I used to go in my suit and tie and whatever in my office. And then when I sold Premier and got into the Brighton app, I work in my studio, my basement. And that can get lonely and isolated sometimes. You know, I even told my daughter-in-law the other day, it's like, I kind of miss going into the office, you know, getting
COVID
in the car.
COVID will never be over COVID during our lifetime and our kids' lifetime. They won't be over it.
Especially the kids.
What happened and what happened to the country, what happened to the world during that time.
Mm-hmm.
It caused a change in how things are viewed, how people are thought about, and trust in government
mm-hmm.
out there over those whole issues.
And then you got, you know, obviously the social media issues and algorithms and the insidious way that they prey on our human elements of curiosity. And you click on a link because you want to see two people fight. You're just curious. You're not trying to promote a fight. And next thing you know, you're getting fights all over the country, or you click on a link of cop pulling over somebody and somebody's arguing and you watch it for a little bit. Next thing you know, it's like, I'm getting all these cops pulling over people. It's like, I think the average young adult, and I'd say the adult for that matter, isn't aware of what's going on behind the scenes and how just intentional this is, because the longer you stay on that platform, the more ads they can sell, the more the you know, share price can go up. It's like, so money's always kind of behind the root of all this and drives a lot of this stuff. But so I keep asking the question, is like, we know all this and AI is coming out. I mean, AI is a huge part of our app. But I still like anybody in the AI space, I'm cautiously optimistic. I wouldn't say I have reservations, but I think I'm cautiously optimistic that we can use AI in the short term, Mike. I don't know in the long term.
I think there's good AI and I think there's bad AI.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's just like anything. Overuse of it can be deterring. But to answer your other question just a minute ago, about the fights and all that, why do people watch NASCAR races? Do they like watching cars go in circles? Or do they like seeing the crashes?
I don't watch NASCAR, but I think they
watch for the crashes.
Yeah, yeah.
So people are watch to see the bad.
Right.
Not to see the good or see other things.
Right.
It's about the bad and the situation happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And that's the problem out there. People are watching and then continue to watch for the bad outcomes. And the media doesn't want to talk about all the good things that are out there.
No.
You know, they don't want to talk about a firefighter that went out and saved a life out there. Or a first responder that ended up bringing someone back from the dead.
Right.
They don't talk, you don't hear about those stories.
No.
And we need more stories like that. And I think that more good stories out there and journalism back in the Howard Cosell days.
Yeah.
that was open, honest, and didn't have it trying to sway one side or the other side. It's just open, honest about the facts.
Right.
I think that's what this country needs. That's what the world needs, is that type of conversation and dialogue to happen. I think those things alone, all along, will help one's mental health and the groups, everyone's about mental health, because there's a trust then on the information they're getting.
Yeah, I think a massive issue with specifically, well, I would say even adults too, because I get guilty of this sometimes, is comparing yourself. And you know, if you're struggling, you're already sad that you dropped out of med school, let's say, or, you know, your small business, your coffee shop you started, you had to close it down. And then you go on TikTok and there's your friend who sold his company for $50 million. Or there's somebody who authored a book that's on the New York bestseller list and your book's, you know, sitting in your basement and you haven't finished it. It's like, there's some like thing going on with this social media that's, I think an unintended outcome or an unintended consequence.
Sure.
And, I think adults are a little bit better at it. Like when I see somebody now, I try to like say, I'm happy for them. You know, if somebody's doing better than me, I'm like, I used to be a little bit envious and jealous. Like, well, why isn't my nonprofit raising more money, or why isn't my startup doing whatever? I'm a lot better at that, but I'm also 59. So I have a lot of wisdom behind me that I can learn from and tap. An 18-year-old doesn't have that. And so I think they can go from 0 to 1,000 in their mind very quickly and then just want to quit because, you know, it just gets worse. And so I think we, us advocates, have a formidable task in front of us. And it is all hands on deck. We need the young Gen Zers involved. We need the parents. I mean, if you don't want your kid to drink, what's the first thing you should do?
Not drink.
Why doesn't anyone say that? Why doesn't anyone have the courage to say that? Oh, drinking, it's okay because the advertisements on the Super Bowl and everybody talks about it. And, you know, it's just like everywhere you go. Well, and then you want your kid not to drink, but you go tailgate and you get hammered in front of your kids. I'm like, I used to do that because I was an alcoholic all the way up until 8 years ago. But there was a lot of hypocrisy in what I was doing. I didn't want Seth to drink, but I was drinking right in front of him. So I think everything starts with us. Like if you want your life to change, you need to change your life first. And then hopefully that leading by example can impact the people in your life that look up to you, your kids, your spouse, your coworkers. But if you can't make those changes yourself, I think we're doomed. If people can't start just looking in the mirror and making better choices, just worry about you. Don't worry about, if I want you to quit, Mike, I can't get you to stop quitting drinking. But if I quit, maybe, I'll give you an example, a clear example. So I did a solo podcast. It was our first podcast we launched. It was like 17 minutes long. It was called The Road to Resilience. And I just spoke in front of that camera for 17 minutes and I shared my story. And one part of my story, I talked about how I just stopped drinking after 32 years. Seth had died and I was worried about Prudence because she was drinking heavily. And I thought, well, I couldn't get Seth to quit. Just like you couldn't do what you wanted to do. It's such a helpless feeling. I couldn't get Prudence to quit. So I thought to myself, well, I'll quit. And that's how I quit drinking. It was very pragmatic, very, very impulsive. I looked in the mirror. I just stopped. Well, that episode played. And the other night, my brother Dan came over to my house. And Dan and I are close, but we've not been super close just because, you know, you just do that with your brother sometimes. You know, they're brothers, but you don't have a lot of those intimate conversations. Well, he came over to my house. We had a cigar and we were talking. And he said, you know, I'm going to tell you something, brother. He goes, I've been a heavy drinker since, like you, a long time. But you guys didn't know it, but I was 6-7 days a week drinker. Because I watched your solo podcast the other day, and you said it was the easiest thing you've ever done, quitting alcohol. Because I haven't had a drop since. So reason I'm telling you that story is that things like a podcast, like these conversations, even though when I was doing it that day, I didn't think it would have any impact in anyone's life, as it turned out, one of the closest people in my life ended up stopping his drinking because of that, me sharing my struggle with it.
Might have been several people.
Yeah, there's something about that. So when you share your story about Garrett, I think about that visit, the visitation, you know, the service you had. A young man came up. You know, Garrett had a lot to do with that. He nudged him up there. You know, you have to know that. And he took his hand and said, go talk to my dad. And he's probably saying, no, I don't want to go do that. And you're like, he's like, yeah, you got to go talk to my dad. And so there's something, as much as it sucks and it hurts and it's painful, there's something beautiful in these stories, Mike, that you and I need to keep sharing, you know?
Well, one thing on Garrett's birthday last year, Garrett's mom came to me, asked me if I had guilt still. I said, no, I don't have guilt. Guilt's not good. Guilt kills.
Mm.
Grief. I have a lot of grief and always will the rest of my life.
Yeah.
But grief is about love. I said, you gotta quit having the guilt. I said, this robs you of your time with your family, time with your kids, time with your husband, time with everything out
there. That's a mic drop right there, man.
And
that's a sound bite, Matt. You gotta pull that one out.
You gotta drop guilt.
I'm going to start using that.
And then I said, you know,
that's
Deb, actually, this is something I've come to, and it took me this long to come to it. And I said, it's based on my faith. But I come up with this, and it's the only thing I can do. It makes sense. God decided that we had 17 years with Garrett.
Yeah.
And that's all we were going to get was 17 years.
Mm.
But because of the 17 years, which I had a lot of great memories. I try to think of those memories all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't try to think about the rougher times because there were rougher times, you know,
yeah.
That's part of a family and being dad.
Yeah.
But I never would have started my foundation.
Mm-hmm.
I've never would have saved the lives I've saved. I've never helped the families I've helped. I wouldn't know what I know about suicide out there.
Mm.
I said, you wouldn't have been involved with NAMI and Foundation 2 and saved the lives you've saved.
You've helped me.
And I've helped you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's I said that to her about her. Mm. She wouldn't have known about all that stuff out there and done all those things also.
Mm-hmm.
I said, maybe look into your faith that God only planned Garrett to be here 17 years because he had a bigger plan for you and a bigger plan for me to carry on to together. We're saving lives one life at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what gets me through every day is that there's a bigger plan out there. Now, I want to talk about one of the quick things. I know we're getting short on time.
You're good.
One thing we didn't cover, but there's a crucial need, is for our vets.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the veterans, they come back. They've sacrificed everything for us to have the freedoms we have here, to do the things we do. And unless you've traveled the world, you don't appreciate what we have here in the United States, all the freedoms we have, all the wealth we have. You say, well, I don't have any money, blah, blah, blah. I can send you to 100 different countries. And you'll find out what really poor is all about.
Right. Yeah.
You know? So I always tell myself, Mike, get over your shit when you feel down.
Yeah.
Because there'd be 1,000 people trade shoes with you in a minute.
Isn't that true?
And
isn't that true?
Just something to remember that when you start feeling down, if you have an opportunity to pick yourself up, that's the way it's one way to pick you up, because you could be. I had one of my board members come to me, and I'm not going to name him, but he came to me on Saturday morning, called me, and he's 57 years old, wasn't going to make the meeting, wasn't in the right headspace. He just got told the week before that he has lung cancer and stage 4 prostate cancer. He's 57.
Oh, man.
What do you think he'd give?
I know.
How much?
I know.
Put a dollar amount on it.
To have my worst day. To have my worst day. To have my worst day.
To have my worst day.
I know. He'd trade it in 2 seconds.
He'd trade it in 2 seconds.
And here I run around a lot feeling sorry for myself. You're exactly right.
I mean, this happened Saturday.
Yeah,
and there's little signs like that all the time.
Chills on my arm.
Out there is
this is good. This is good.
There are people out there that are suffering.
This is good.
And our vets are a group that need to be the help out there, because there's more vets dying from suicide because of the trauma they went through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ask yourself, if you went over to war and you're at and got shot at and you were forced to shoot someone else, would you be able to live with yourself?
And
after
that person didn't want to be there either.
And they didn't really want to be there either.
Right.
So how would you cope with that yourself? These people need our help.
I don't know.
They need our support.
Yeah.
They need everything we can do.
Yeah.
So I encourage you, if you have someone from the vets come and speak sometime for you.
Set that up for me. Oh, actually, Rod Courtney can come. Crush.
Yep.
He's a Marine. Well, matter of fact, I'll get him in here. No, it's been great, Mike. I am so grateful that, you know, I had 23 years with Seth. You had 17 with Garrett. I tell myself that too, that he could have. I know a friend, not a friend, but he's, you know, a new friend of this circle we're in, but his young boy drowned in a pool, I think, when he was 5 or 6. And I often ask myself, what happens if Seth would have drowned at 5? I wouldn't have had those block of memories, I would have been 19 or 18 years. I wouldn't have had, those memories. And I, even with Prudence, I mean, we're married 21 years. What happens if she would have died in year 10? I wouldn't have had those memories of going to Rome and Europe and all that. So it's like, we wouldn't have had our other child too. It's like, so yeah, there has to be some way you can reframe the worst possible things. And again, even if you don't have, like most of people watching this haven't lost anyone to what we've lost, but if you have somebody that is struggling and they're really having a hard time with their life, ask yourself this question, the worst moment that you could possibly have with them. I don't have that opportunity to have that worst moment. Neither does Mike with Garrett and Seth and Prudence. So be grateful you could have a fight with your loved one, or you can slam the door on somebody, or you can walk out of a room, or you can text them something that you regret sending. We don't have that chance. Mike and I don't. I would give anything back to have the worst fight I ever had with Seth, to tell him the awful things that I've told him sometimes when he got arrested and all these things that he had. I would, and I know you would too. So be grateful for your situation, that it isn't as unfortunate maybe as what we've been through. And you know what? I have 2 of my 3 boys still here, and you have other kids.
I have a son and a daughter.
And yep. I have a granddaughter, and I have a daughter-in-law. My 93-year-old dad's alive. So yeah, would I trade myself right now in a random lottery pool for anybody on the planet? No. If you put every human in a bowl and said, here's the deal, Mike, you can either stay you, or you can have a random opportunity to be anybody in the world. Would you do that?
No.
No way. No effing way I would do it. You could even tell me the country and I still wouldn't do it. You could say just the United States, I still wouldn't do it. I still think it's difficult that the lives you and I have had, the challenges we've had, they were preventable and pretty predictable, the roads they were on. I'm still very grateful.
Yeah. You know? The idea, I'd say, that we'd both pass on is to try to live your life regret-free as possible.
Yeah.
Because if you can live it regret-free and you can help your loved ones to help them live their lives regret-free, overall, long-term, we're going to save lives.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of regret in this world.
Yeah.
About decisions that are made. They're learning opportunities.
Yeah.
You know, you call the term fight. I'd like to call them heated discussions.
Yeah. No, yeah. You're right. And I do remember we had some good ones.
Yes.
But I guess I'll finish with this is I had a podcast I was listening to and the host who I really admire, he presented this opportunity in life. He said, imagine that you died yesterday. Yesterday was your death day, but the good Lord came down and said, hey, Mike, I like you. I'm going to let you come back. Here's your chip. Okay. But you get to come back knowing that you died yesterday. Like you knew you died, but you get a do-over. How would you treat today?
I don't know how to answer that.
I mean, I would be like, this is the first day of the rest of my life because I was dead yesterday. And now I missed being alive. I missed all the misery, the suffering, the bad. I missed it all because I love being alive. And his point was, if you could somehow tell yourself, even in the worst moments, I'm still above ground. I'm still here. I still have a fight. Your friend that just got diagnosed with literally a death sentence. You know, I don't have that. I've not been diagnosed anything like that. I can fight tomorrow. I can fight next year. Okay. I think there's something in there. There's something in there that we can unpackage and we can, those of us that struggle with mental health, that we could find some hope and inspiration in stories like that, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, because you don't know. Today could be your last day. And yeah. It will be. That's guaranteed.
Death and taxes, the only two guarantees in life.
Yeah.
On this earth.
Well, listen, how do people reach you if they want to learn more about Strike Out the Stigma or Project SAFE? Or
our website is www.projectsafecr.org. We're also on Facebook. We do have a fundraiser coming up on September 14th. It's at the Shriners Club in Hiawatha.
Okay.
It starts at 11:30 and ends at 4:00. We have Vinny and the Night Prowlers going to be there as a live band singing for us. We're going to have a rock climbing wall. Hiawatha Police, Fire, Ambulance, and K-9 are going to be there also.
Okay.
So look to have people show up there. There will be a silent auction going on to raise some monies to help us out to maintain the year for us. But our goal is to do things within the community. We do have a grant program and we give away about $10,000 a year on that. And it's for people that can't afford their co-pays or the deductibles.
Okay, great.
People apply for that and it's up to $500 a year for an individual.
Okay.
So they can continue on with their mental health needs with the counselor. We also have a program called Go Farther, and it's for 10 people, and it's for someone that had a sudden loss, and it's helped to establish groups that are out there that can form that has sudden loss. They can form a unity, a group that has someone that has had a loss.
Mm.
It doesn't have to be suicide.
Yeah,
it could be anything.
Yeah,
and it's just to be able to talk about it, get through it. It's an 8-week session. And in the end, you may have found a counselor that can help you through it. You may have found some friends that you can talk to after this deal. And the nice thing about it is that we work with a firm. They would have an intern that needs to collect their hours in counseling. So they would run it and then backed up by a licensed counselor so that person, it gives them an opportunity also to get the training they need working with someone because they just need the hours in to get their final license. So they've been well-trained already. And it's just a great way to give them back. We have scholarships for graduating seniors. We have scholarships for graduates of college that are going on to their master's program in mental health to give away there because there's more counselors needed within the community.
So we'll have all these resources on the site for the podcast. Yep. So with that, great show, man. Appreciate it as always. Good seeing you. And until next time. Thanks for tuning in to Living Undeterred.
Thank you.